This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Teacher unions are under attack in a big way these days, and depending upon your point of view, they either deserve it for standing in the way of much-needed education reforms, or they're being scapegoated by critics who are more interested in weakening collective bargaining agreements than improving the nation's schools.
Either way, this is an interesting time in the history of teacher unions. They remain among the most powerful unions in the country, but the ground is shifting beneath them. The public is demanding better schools, cash-strapped states are challenging costly collective bargaining agreements, and the Obama administration is pushing reforms long opposed by the unions.
These include measures such as more charter schools, linking teacher pay to teacher performance, changing seniority rules, and making it easier to fire bad teachers.
Our next guest has a lot to say about all of that and more. Randy Weingarten is president of the American Federation of Teachers. The AFT and its larger sister union, the National Education Association, have a combined membership of more than 4.5 million members, and they wield power and influence that go well beyond public school classrooms. And Randy Weingarten, welcome. It's great to have you on Radio Boston.
It's great to be here.
And listeners, what's your view of teacher unions and reform? Can unions help lead the necessary reform to improve public education? The AFT's Randy Weingarten says they can, and she's here to talk about how. Or do you think unions are the problem and need to get out of the way or at least change with the times? Education reform, that's our talker today. Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. This is your chance to talk with one of the country's most prominent labor leaders about one of our most vexing public policy issues. And Randy Garten, let me just start this way before we talk about some of the policies. It's fair to say that teacher unions have a bit of a public relations challenge these days. Why do you think that's so?
Well, I think that's so because of the nature of what we need to do in schools. And what happens is it's much easier to point fingers than to actually do the hard work. So what we've seen, and then I think there's a second reason, which is because of the budget crisis. And again, it's much easier to point fingers than to do work. So let me talk about economics for a second.
Sure.
Number one, the teachers of this country, the janitors that work in schools of this country, the people, the snowplow drivers, since I know that there's going to be another snow in Boston next couple of days, none of these folks actually created the economic crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You'd see a lot more of the blame for that in a bank headquarters than in a classroom. And yet, what's happening is that the decent wages we have tried to bargain for are now being viewed as the cause, and the pensions. Then take a look at pensions. The average pension of a public sector worker in the United States of America is $22,000, which is about $430 a week. And in Massachusetts, the public workers don't have Social Security, so that is all they have.
Mm.
So when you start then and you look at the states that have real big budget crises, the ones that have the top budget crises, like Texas and Arizona, they're not organized. The states that actually have the smaller budget crises, like Massachusetts and Montana, heavily organized.
Okay, so, agreed. So the unions obviously aren't responsible for the budget crises alone. But I want to just sort of get to this point. You were quoted recently in the New York Times. This is what I read. Quote, "We've spent a lot of time in the last 2 years looking at ourselves in a mirror, trying to figure out what we've done right and what we've done wrong, and we're trying to reform." That's what you said. And so I guess what I took from that and what I want to ask you is, do you feel that your job is both to protect existing union protections, but also to sort of drag your membership toward some sort of reform?
I don't think
is there a tension in that?
Actually, I don't think my job is either of what you just said, because and that is what we bridle against.
Mm-hmm.
Our job is to help teachers become the best they can be.
Mm.
To give them and fight for the tools and conditions they need to teach. And this is how I'd say it, is all these folks say teachers are the most important in-school factor. And then in the next breath, when teachers say, well, this is what I need, and my union is trying to get this in collective bargaining or in some way, they say, off with your head.
Mm-hmm.
You're just looking for protections. The people that I represent around the country, 1.5 million, they desperately want to do a great job for kids. And so what they want is the tools and conditions to do that, the voice so that they can express themselves in terms of what they think kids need. And they also want some economic dignity so that they don't want to be rich. I mean, they may want to be rich, but they didn't go into teaching to be rich. But what they want is some economic dignity. Now, what I said we look in the mirror is because, you know, when you look, for example, at due process, and it takes months and months and months for a tenure hearing, that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've done is said, let's step up to the plate and make due process or tenure about fairness and speed, not about a cumbersome process. It's the same in terms of evaluation. Teacher quality is hugely important if we're trying to help kids become knowledge knowers. That's where we have to take the education system.
Hmm.
But in order to do that, let's look at what our international competitors do. They don't do charter schools. They don't do individual merit pay. What they do is they prepare teachers, they support teachers, and yes, they evaluate them based upon student outcomes and other things, but they really spend a lot more time on the front end, like I saw in two schools that I was at today in Boston.
Where were you and what did you see?
I was at the Edwards School. And
this is a school that's experimenting with a longer school day.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And I was at the Edwards School and I was at the Boston Teachers Union School.
Mm-hmm.
These two schools are fantastic schools. And what we should, you know, what we should be doing is looking there as well as looking at Finland, Singapore, at what works, sustain it and replicate it.
Mm. What about, you mentioned charter schools. And as we mentioned, the Obama administration favors charter school expansion. Massachusetts has just passed an education reform law that would lift caps on charter school expansion and establish the state's first ever in-district charter
mm-hmm.
schools. Good idea. Do you support that?
Look, we've supported charter schools. I know this will shock people, but Al Shanker, one of my predecessors, was the originator, one of the originators of the concept of charter schools. Mm-hmm. Charters were about trying to create some flexibility to see if things would work
mm-hmm.
to help promote and encourage student outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And if they did, then transmit it back, import it back or export it back into the public school system. What's happened now is that some people have taken that concept and are trying to create a competitive school system. And that just doesn't work. So here we have.
Why doesn't that work? Because if the idea is to sort of create new models and set up schools that can exist outside of the normal rules so that they can innovate,
right,
so that they can create more models to replicate within the system, what's wrong? I mean, isn't that what's going on?
No, there's nothing wrong with the concept, but this is the point.
Hmm.
Let's look at the evidence. We should, you know, ideology is fine.
Sure.
But let's look at the evidence. So we now have 20 years of evidence on charter schools.
Hmm.
Now of 20 years. And the most recent best study was done by Stanford by actually somebody who's viewed as a charter advocate. And what she found was that 83% of the charter schools in the United States of America don't do either as well or do worse than the neighboring public schools. So we spent a lot of oxygen on a concept that hasn't actually helped us get to what we have to do for all kids, which is prepare them for life and for the knowledge economy.
But still mean there's like 20%+ of great examples of schools that, you know, that could be replicated?
About 17%, but then this is my point.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of really good public schools. And so we should be spending the time looking at the good examples of charters, looking at the good examples like the Edwards School, the Boston Teachers Union School, of regular public schools, and not have this competitive, polarized environment that basically says this is significantly better. My point is, if this total flexibility and not having teachers have a voice, if that really was what worked, then you'd have the vast proportion of charters outpacing public schools. Instead, what we see is the places that are outpacing us, Massachusetts outpaces, and Maryland, two states that are totally unionized, outpace most of the other schools in America. And internationally, Finland, Singapore, Canada outpace us. Let's look at what they're doing instead of having this fight about unions versus no unions, because at the end of the day, every state that is outpacing in the United States and every country that is outpacing in the world, they're pretty much all unionized.
Mm.
So it's a red herring to have this fight about unions versus not. Should we be focused on quality? Absolutely. Should we do changes? Absolutely. But we are about ensuring the quality of the work we do, and that's what we need to do going forward.
Well, let me just play you, just to push back a tiny bit on stick with this charter school thing for a bit. This is Paul Grogan. He's the president of the Boston Foundation, a proponent of the charter school movement. We spoke to him earlier today about the Massachusetts reform bill, and he talked about his concern that the unions are too slow to support this kind of reform. Let's just listen to him and then respond.
The unions are not awakening to the need for change and the need for them to be part of the change as opposed to something that has to be acted upon. And it's going to require a real change in leadership. And if it doesn't happen, what's going to happen is more of what we're doing now, which is creating more charters and shrinking the population of students who are in the traditional public school system so resistant to change.
So what do you mean? So he's sort of saying that unless unions sort of get on board with this, right, there's going to be more and more of these charter schools, and what you're talking about is going to be diminished.
Well, frankly, you know, I started three charter schools in New York City. And, you know, frankly, I am actually really tired of hearing these so-called reformers telling everybody else to change and then making excuses for the reforms that don't work. So we've actually tried things like when I bargained something like school-based merit pay in New York City. Dr. Fryer from Harvard just said, found out it didn't work. Okay, we tried it. Let's actually do some other pay reform. So Mr. Grogan actually is not looking at the tons of public schools that have changed. Look at, for example, New Haven. There is a system-wide different contract in New Haven that was done a year and a half ago. That's whole system reform. In fact, that contract was viewed as so important to Yale University that they started the New Haven Promise to provide scholarships for every single New Haven student that gets to a certain GPA and a certain attendance rate. So, frankly, if Mr. Grogan wants to do that kind of work, let's help get kids into college and prepared for college instead of figuring out how to have competing reforms.
We're talking with Randy Weingarten. She's the president of the American Federation of Teachers, and we're talking to her about how unions can play a role, if they're playing a role, with real reform, and we're asking for your calls at 800-423-8255. And let's go to Steffi, who's calling from Wabun. Hi, Steffi.
Hello. I'm calling because I had three children in the Newton Public Schools, which are famous for being great public schools. And I understand there's a reason for unions, for protection for the teachers. On the other hand, until we see every teacher stepping forward to demand excellence out of their colleagues, the teachers' union is shooting itself in the foot. Hmm. And in our case, we saw more than several teachers in this fabulous school system who shouldn't have been teaching anymore. And yet, they were hidden through the system, allowed to destroy a classroom full of kids and destroy their interest in learning for an entire year so that they could live out their contract in order to retire.
All right, Steffi, well, let's let Randy Weingarten respond to that. What do you say to Steffi? Because this is a concern.
Right.
And I just want to sort of add one thing. I don't think any of where my questions are coming from or any of that kind of criticism is based on the idea that all teachers are like that. But how do you deal with those sort of few bad apples that bring down the whole cart, if you will?
So I agree with Steffi. You can't have – this is part of what we're saying. We have to focus on quality, and we have to make sure that we change to do that. And frankly, some of us have actually tried to say to management, we're tired of your inaction on this. So let's police our own profession. And I did that in 2004 in New York City. And then Chancellor Klein and Mayor Bloomberg basically said, no, you know, that's not your job. So a lot of people actually try to put us into the corner of only defending as opposed to leading and proposing. So Steffi is right. That's part of the reason why we stepped up and said, this shouldn't simply be rhetoric about nobody wants bad teachers. Because the vast majority of teachers really try their hardest and do an amazing job under tough circumstances. But we are taking seriously the issue of having real evaluation systems and ensuring that we are growing our profession. And if somebody can't do their job, ushering them out or counseling them out of the profession.
Isn't that the challenge? Because what Steffi's talking about is even when it's recognized by so many people that a teacher is bad, there is no quick or efficient way to move them on.
Actually, we proposed something a month ago that's getting a lot of traction. And just last week, about 8 union leaders and 8 superintendents got into a room to see if we could work it out. In fact, the ideas we proposed, the 1-2-3 step of evaluation, then helping somebody, and if we can't help somebody, have a quick process, that step or that process is now embedded in legislation that the Connecticut Federation of Teachers, my affiliate, is doing in Connecticut. Mm. And so what we're saying is there's a way of doing this. Let's stop making excuses. We want to help somebody after a long career, before you say, you know, here's a kick in the pants.
Sure.
But ultimately, we think you can do that in a 1-2-3 step. Evaluation, then ultimately help, and if not, a quick process out of the profession.
Well, thanks, Steffi, for the call. Let's go to Paul, who's calling from Lunenburg for a teacher's perspective. I understand you're a teacher, Paul.
I am. Good afternoon, Mrs. Weingarten. I'm a proud member of the AFT Local 1044.
Fantastic. And call me Randy.
All right, Randy. Thank you. I don't want to reiterate too many points. I guess what frustrates me most is the for-profit mentality that's placed on educators without ever taking into account or helping us deal with so many of the issues that are beyond our control. We're held accountable for not, quote-unquote, producing a better product. But I can tell you in a number of the classes that I've had where I'm dealing with ELL kids, 504 kids, IEP kids, and like the former caller's student, somebody who just wants to get an education, and juggling all of that without adequate training, without adequate support, without adequate follow-through in a system that is under-administrated as well as understaffed, it gets very difficult. And I think we're getting blamed for a lot of things that are beyond our control and not always getting the recognition for doing, you know, what we do. And I guess...
Paul, I'm grateful for the call, and I'm grateful to have a teacher's perspective, and I'm glad you called. I want to move on because we've got a couple of other calls that I want to try to get in. Let's go to Seth, who's calling from Brighton. Hi, Seth.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Very well. What's on your mind?
I'm actually a first-year teacher, so while the previous caller sounds pretty veteran, I'm very new and green. And, you know,
How you doing?
What's that?
How you doing?
I'm exhausted.
I bet.
It's hard work.
I'm exhausted, but I love it. I love it. I wouldn't be doing anything.
That's fantastic.
So my opinion of teachers' unions, obviously I respect and I'm benefiting from a lot of the precedent that has been set by teachers' union, a lot of the hard work. But I'm wondering, what am I overseeing? And I would love to have your thoughts, Randy, on the whole prospect of having performance tied to pay.
Well, you know, it's a very funny question when somebody asks me that, because frankly, you know, performance should be, you know, should guide everything we do. Like, if somebody is not performing in a job, they shouldn't be in a job. So that when somebody says performance tied to pay, you know, we should not have teachers in our profession who are not performing well.
In the context, you know, of this conversation, it's not a straightforward question, is it?
But so if what you're asking is, you know, should there be additional pay if kids' test scores go up, or should there be additional pay if there's an extended day like we see in the Edwards? Or, you know, if you're working in a hard-to-staff school, there's lots and lots of different ways where there should be additional pay. What we've seen is that paying people simply for the test scores of their kids doesn't work. And this proposal, this experiment I did in New York, where we did it on a school-based level, as I said, Dr. Fryer just found it didn't work in terms of improving achievement. And Vanderbilt University just last year found that even when you paid people $15,000 more for their students' test scores, that didn't work to improve achievement. So if we're talking about a real differentiated pay schedule, competitive pay plus paying people for the kinds of things we want to promote, like just happened in Baltimore, totally new compensation schedule, I'm all in. If we're talking about it based upon individual test scores for kids, which then would make tests even more, which would make our system more focused on tests than they are right now? I'm very concerned about that.
It's, I mean, I know that there have been some studies, and I've looked at them, that show that that holding teachers accountable with test scores doesn't necessarily, that the empirical data isn't necessarily there to show that that works. But there is sort of an intuitive thing,
right,
isn't there, that, you know, to demand that teachers get that kind of result seems to make sense in so many ways.
Except that that's if you actually think about schools as a niche market and as a business, as opposed to what they are. Like, for example, I've been reading a book called The Cult of Efficiency, which is exactly using that process. Happened in the 1920s and the 1930s. It didn't work then. It doesn't work now. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be focused on performance. Mm-hmm. But in schools, performance is collective. And it is about making sure teachers are the best they can be, but also having really good curriculum and also having ways to help kids with the factors that are out of our control, like wraparound services. That's part of the reason why in the Edgewood School, when they're having the longer day, they're talking about doing all sorts of things like art and music and helping kids in real time. Broad curriculum, engaging kids. It's not just about math and English, and it's not just about what we bring to the table. It has to be about what everybody else brings to the table, too.
Well, Randy Weingarten, obviously a huge set of issues. We're not going to be able to get to them all right now. I'm very grateful for your time today. Thanks for coming in, and thanks
to
the callers.
Thanks for the time.
Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers. And we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, the Boston Globe's arts reporter Jeff Edger joins us with some weekend activity suggestions. But first, WBUR is racing to the end of its spring fundraiser. Radio Boston, like all of our programming here, depends on generous support from our listeners. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. And here's All Things Considered host and reporter Deb Becker to tell you how you can help.